ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट 46 कैंटो 7। मौना पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की। ट्रांसलेशन। ओ सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path to liberation: to remain silent, not to speak to anyone, to observe vows, to amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge, to undergo austerities, to study the Vedas and other Vedic literatures, to execute the duties of Varnashram Dharma, to explain the Shastras, to stay in a solitary place, to chant mantras silently, and to be absorbed in trance. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. Because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.15, Kechit kave kevalya bhaktya vasudeva parayana अघम धुनवंति कार्ष्णेन निहारम इव भास्कर। ओनली अ रेयर पर्सन हु हैज अडॉप्टेड कंप्लीट अनअलॉयड डिवोशनल सर्विस टू कृष्णा कैन अप्रूट द वीड्स ऑफ सिंफुल एक्शंस विद नो पॉसिबिलिटी दैट दे विल रिवाइव। ही कैन डू दिस सिंपली बाय डिस्चार्जिंग डिवोशनल सर्विस जस्ट एज द सन कैन इमीडिएटली डिसिपेट फॉग बाय इट्स रेज। द रियल पर्पस ऑफ ह्यूमन लाइफ इज टू अटेन लिबरेशन फ्रॉम मटीरियल एंटैंगलमेंट। Such liberation can be achieved by many methods, tapasa, brahmacharyena, samena cha, damena cha, but all of them more or less depend on tapasya, austerity, which begins with celibacy. Sukhdev Goswami says that those who are Vasudeva Parayana, who have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev, Krishna, automatically achieve the results of mauna, silence, vrata, vows, and other such methods simply by discharging devotional service. In other words, these methods are not so powerful. If one takes to devotional service, all of them are very easily performed. Mauna, for example, does not mean that one should just stop speaking. The tongue is meant for speaking, although sometimes to make a big show, a person remains silent. There are many who observe silence some day in a week. Vaishnavas, however, do not observe such silence. Silence means not speaking foolishly. Speakers at assemblies, conferences and meetings generally speak foolishly like toads. This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami as Vacho Vegam. One who wants to say something can show himself to be a big orator, but rather than go on speaking nonsense, better to remain silent. This method of silence, therefore, is recommended for persons very attached to speaking nonsense. One who is not a devotee must speak nonsensically because he does not have the power to speak about the glories of Krishna. Thus, whatever he says is influenced by the illusory energy and is compared to the croaking of a frog. One who speaks about the glories of the Lord, however, has no need to be silent. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends, Kirtaniya Sada Hari. One should go on chanting the glories of the Lord 24 hours a day. There is no question of becoming mauna or silent. The 10 processes for liberation or improvement on the path of liberation are not meant for devotees. Kevalaya bhaktya. If one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all 10 methods of liberation are automatically observed. Prahlad Maharaj's proposal is that such processes may be recommended for the Ajitendriya, those who cannot conquer their senses. Devotees, however, have already conquered their senses. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. A devotee is already freed from material contamination. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore said, Dushta mana tumi kishera vaishnava pratishthara tare nirjanena ghare tava harinam kevala kaitava. There are many who like to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in a silent, solitary place. But if one is not interested in preaching, talking constantly to the non-devotees, the influence of the modes of nature is very difficult to surpass. Therefore, unless one is extremely advanced in Krishna consciousness, one should not imitate Haridas Thakur, who had no other business than chanting the holy name always 24 hours a day. Prahlad Maharaj does not condemn such a process, he accepts it. But without active service to the Lord, simply by such methods, one generally cannot attain liberation. One cannot attain liberation simply by false pride. Hare Krishna. So I'm very embarrassed to be sitting here amongst very senior God brothers, but because I've been given this service, I try to speak something with the blessings of Sri Guru, my parents, and all the assembled senior Vaishnavas. So in this portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are very beautiful prayers that are being spoken by Sri Prahlad Maharaj to pacify the Lord Narsingdev. And in this particular portion of this chapter, actually, Prahlad Maharaj has just spoken about, in the previous verses, he's just spoken about people who are, there are some people who are sadhus who perform solitary bhajan, retire to some solitary place like the Himalayas, do their bhajan there. But he says, I am not interested in doing that. He says that as long as there are, fools and rascals in this world, I would like to be among them, preach to them, and raise them from where they are. And in this particular verse, he's speaking about, he says there are 10 different methods for liberation, as prescribed in scriptures. Prahlad Maharaj himself is a Mahajan, he's one of the 12 Mahajans. So he is giving this knowledge about the 10 methods of liberation. He speaks, like to remain silent, to observe vows, to amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge, to undergo austerities, to study the Vedas, execute Varnashram Dharma, explain Shastra, stay in a solitary place, to chant mantras, and to stay in a to be in a trance. So all these different methods, he says, can liberate us from the cycle of birth and death. However, he's also mentioning that these, we'll come to that as we go along. He says the different methods of liberation in today's day and age. He's speaking, this is spoken in the Satyuga, but this is true even today. It's exactly true today. He says that many of these practices, people are using only for as a professional practice. For their livelihood, as a means of livelihood. And because such persons become proud, by following these things, they are not able to be successful. That means they are not getting liberated. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the real purpose of human life, it's a real purpose of human life, is actually to be liberated from the cycle of birth and death. While we are, been going through so many millions of species of life, it is very difficult, it's not difficult, it's impossible for us to be liberated. The human form of life is the only opportunity, only window of opportunity, so to say, where we can actually get out of this cycle of birth and death. And it is actually compared, to a prison. This material existence is compared to a prison. In many places, many devotees give this comparison. But what kind of an amazing prison this is? It's not like an ordinary prison. If you see the ordinary prisons of this material world, no matter how well guarded it is, no matter how well designed it is, how remote it is, there is not a single prison in the world where a prisoner has not managed to escape. Every prison in the world, the most secure prisons are prisons called Alcatraz, and these are extremely heavily guarded with dogs, and there is a moat all around and all kinds of things, but still people have managed to escape. But, as in one lecture, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was explaining, that what kind of a prison this material world is, where there are no walls, there are no guards, But still, and people in that prison are suffering like anything. They are burning with suffering. But still nobody wants to run away. Nobody is running away. Though even if the door is kept open, nobody wants to run away. You know, like that experiment done by that Pavlov, you know, where the rats, he keeps giving them some electric shocks. You know, one button electric shock, other button they get some food. So they just keep playing. You know, one day they press the red button and they get a shock. They press the other button, they get some food. He keeps changing, you know, the combination. One day with the red button, they get food. Other button, they get a shock. He keeps changing and they get so absorbed in that experiment, the two rats which are in that cage. You know, they get so absorbed that daily they're either getting a shock or getting a food. It becomes like a big game. One day he lifts the door of the cage, you know, allowing them to go out. But they still continue trying to play the buttons, you know, because they're getting some kind of a pleasure, you know, that okay, there is a shock that I get, but after that I get some good food also, you know. So that desire or hope for getting that good food keeps them attached to this material world. So similarly, our situation is also like that. That, you know, irrespective, you know, people coming and telling us, the devotees are telling us that, you know, get out of this material world. Here is the method to get out of the material world. Still, we are so attached that we are not able to let go. We are so attached to the material world. But Prabhupada is making the point that the real purpose of human life, here is the window where we can actually get liberated. But if you see all the methods of liberation that I mentioned here, you know, in the purport also Srila Prabhupada mentions that all these methods of liberation are based on some sort of austerity. All of them, you look at them, mauna, you know, then vrata, taking vows, mastering Vedic knowledge, all these require some sort of austerity. And it is always very difficult. There'll be very few amongst us, you know, very small percentage of people amongst the human, you know, human race who are very voluntarily willing to accept austerity. Very few. You know, it is generally very difficult to perform any austerity. One thing is to perform the austerity. Second is to sustain it over a period of time. You know, performing austerity once, you know, Ekadashi once in 15 days, yes, we can do it. Someone tells you do Ekadashi Vrat for 1 month or 1 year, very difficult. Not everybody can do it. You know, I was just thinking that, you know, one is spiritual practices, even those who are completely on the bodily platform, you know, who have no, as they say, dur dur tak ko unko, they have no connection, you know, about spiritual life, and completely on the bodily platform, even for them, you know, if you tell them just to exercise daily, you know, some of them have this feeling, you know, that okay, if we perform little yoga, you know, daily, they don't do it out of any spiritual understanding, but they have an understanding that if I do yoga daily, my body will be very nice and firm and strong. But to do yoga also is not easy. If you see, people started do it for 2-3 days, you know, 4-5 days, 1 week maximum, and then they give it up. They are not able to sustain. And even to do yoga, if you see, you know, I go for a walk sometimes in the morning in the garden, and in the garden there are some 10-15 of them sitting together, you know, and then there's one person who shows them the asanas, and the remaining 10-15 of them, they are following. So even to perform yoga, for exercise also, if you see, people who exercise in their homes, it's very difficult for them to sustain. Even if they have all the paraphernalia in the house to exercise, they still go to a gym and they exercise, because to do it alone is very difficult. To sustain this enthusiasm to do some austerity for a long period of time is very difficult unless you have someone else also who is doing it along with you. Very difficult to sustain. The other point is that there are no role models. If you really look at it, you know, just see, in these 10 methods of liberation which I mentioned here, to remain silent, you know, it is mentioned, Prahlad Maharaj is mentioning here that just by remaining silent, by observing the vow of mauna, it is possible to be liberated. By executing, you know, by staying in a solitary place, by studying, scrutinizing study of the Vedic, you know, knowledge, it is possible to be liberated. He is giving these examples. But it is, if you see, in the modern times, there are hardly any role models for any of these. Can anyone just think of, you know, yesterday night I was trying to remember some examples of people who might have, you know, come close at least to, you know, perfecting their lives by following one of these paths to liberation. There are very few examples. It's very difficult to remember any examples except one. You know, about one of the things that is mentioned is to chant mantras silently. You know, it is mentioned that to chant mantras silently is one of the means of liberation. So we are all chanting, you know, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and Haridas Thakur is the, you know, the Namacharya. He is the example of a person who perfected his life and, you know, he became an example for everybody by simply chanting. You know, he used to chant practically 24 hours a day. Chant the holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra practically 24 hours a day. But Prabhupada is also cautioning us in the purport that we cannot simply imitate. Even if somebody, you know, even if we are seeing that Haridas Thakur is chanting this holy names, you know, 24 hours a day, it is not right for us to try to imitate him. And, you know, there are many examples of this. But one prominent example I had heard in one lecture, where once a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada was preaching in Vrindavan, and this disciple, when he heard about Haridas Thakur, he became extremely inspired. I mean, he was already chanting, you know, more than 16 rounds, and he became extremely inspired when he heard, you know, that, oh, Haridas Thakur used to chant 192 rounds every day, and in, you know, he said, why not I also try, you know. So he, in a lecture, you know, Prabhupada was speaking in a lecture, in the question answers, he asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, that, Srila Prabhupada, I would like to, you know, be in Vrindavan like a Babaji and chant, you know, Satat, Kirtaniya Sada Hari, you know, the whole day I would like to chant, you know, 192 rounds like Haridas Thakur. So Srila Prabhupada told him that, no, don't do that. You simply chant 16 rounds Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, associate with the devotees, that is good enough. So after the, you know, discussion was over, all the devotees, you know, he told the devotees, no, but I am going to do it. I'm still going to do it. So all the devotees told him, Are, don't you understand? You know, Srila Prabhupada told you specifically that you just chant 16 rounds, you know, you don't need to chant 192 rounds or anything, you just chant 16 rounds, be happy. But this devotee said, actually you don't understand, you know, this is a general instruction. If he says to me that you can chant 192 rounds, then, you know, all of you will feel, you know, I am not able to do, and you'll get a complex, you know. So just as a general instruction for the general mass of people, Prabhupada said you chant 16 rounds. But for me, internally, you know, there's an understanding, you know, that I can chant 192 rounds. So this way, this devotee, then he, you know, he went into Vrindavan and he started chanting every day, you know, 192 rounds. And he was following it for several months, he was following it. And then one fine day, after some 6-7 months, he just vanished. The devotee just vanished. Nobody saw him after that. Nobody could see where he is, what happened to him, nothing. And then several years later, somebody noticed him at a petrol pump in some state in the United States. And somewhere in the United States, he was a petrol pump attendant, you know, in the United States. So this devotee went up to him and said, hey, Prabhu, what happened? You know, Kirtaniya Sada Hari, you are saying you will chant every day 192 rounds. What happened? He said, no, I have chanted enough for a lifetime now. So now I don't need to chant. It's enough. So this person, he got so burnt out, you know, A, because he didn't follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Spiritual master specifically told him, but he, you know, he decided to use his own intelligence that no, I am better, I can do it, I will follow this process of just chanting and nothing else. See, technically, if you go by the scriptures, what he is doing sounds to be correct, right? It is said that for the age of Kali, Harer Naam Eva Kevalam Kalo na astyeva, na astyeva, na astyeva gatir anyatha. There is no other way for this age of Kali other than chanting the holy names. So technically he is correct. But practically speaking, and on the real platform, because the guru always knows best, you know, as we always hear that, you know, the opinion of the whole world on one side and the opinion of Guru on the other side. Guru's opinion is more heavy. That is why Guru means heavy. Therefore, the Guru's opinion is more important. What he says, he knows where we are. As they say, kaun kitne pani mein hai, you know. He knows. Just by seeing us, he can see through our heart and he knows what our real intention is. And therefore, he is able to see. If we just follow the instructions of the Guru, then we will not fall down. So Prabhupada is very clearly saying in this, you know, he says, while Haridas Thakur has perfected his life by one of these means of liberation, which is simply chanting the holy names, he says we should not try to imitate, you know, like without being ready. The second reason is that this person was not really ready for it. I mean, if you take a flower bud and expect it to give full fragrance, it's not going to happen. You know, it will take its own time for it to bloom fully and then, you know, give its fragrance. So it is the lesson we learn from this point is that we should not just try to imitate. The other point about it is, it's not even very practical. If you see, it seems very daunting, you know, very scary. If you see some of these methods which I mentioned, the first two only, you know, as they say, in the first two, three points, wicket gir jayega. You know, if you see the common people today, you ask them, observe mon, be silent. Very difficult, no? I mean, who can do it? In today's day and age, you ask them to just observe mon vrat for a long time. It is not possible. Observe vows. Who can do it? You know, everyone likes to put Bhishma Dev, you know, on a pedestal. What a great vow he took. Bhishma, Bhishma. But are we able to follow any vow? Very simple vows. You tell a common man on the street, pick him up and take a vow now, that from tomorrow you will stop drinking tea. Very difficult, you know. It's impossible for the common man on the street to really take vows which he is able to follow for the rest of his life. So it is very, very daunting. And even if they are able to follow these vows for a protracted period of time, it's not very easy to succeed. If you see, you know, there are some examples of people who try to follow these vows, but the fall down is quick. You know, like for example, Ajamil. The story of Ajamil is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, Gauran Prabhu was once mentioning that Ajamil, he himself followed these principles. You know, he was a very pakka Brahmin. He was following some of these principles, these Brahminical principles he was following. He was, you know, very strict celibate. He was very nicely, reading the scriptures, scrutinizingly reading the scriptures. He was performing all nice, he was keeping very clean and everything, all the Brahminical qualities he had. However, despite following all these rules and regulations and these Brahminical principles for such a long period of time, one incident and he fell down. All that austerity was not enough to protect him. Just imagine, all that austerity which he maybe performed for 20 years of his life, it was not enough to protect him from one incident. You know, he just completely lost his intelligence and fell down. And fell down so badly. However, as Gauranga Prabhu was mentioning, he said that the same Ajamil, who for 20 years, despite performing austerities, it couldn't protect him, just 3-4 times, not even knowingly, he called out the names of Narayan. You know, in a helpless condition, he called out the names of Narayan, and that was enough to protect him. 20 years of austerity on one side, and 3-4 times calling out the names of Lord Narayan, even without really calling out to Narayan, he was calling out to his son. Just uttering the word Narayan 3-4 times was enough to protect him, save him from the clutches of, you know, death, cruel death, save him from the clutches of the Yam Dutas, and actually bring him back onto the path of liberation. So so one is, it is very difficult to proceed. Second is, those who are able to follow, you know, those who, you know, follow any of these processes, performing austerities or taking great powerful vows, or reading scriptures and becoming very expert, what is the consequence? Prahlad Maharaj is saying, either they make it into a professional living. You know, as we see sometimes Brahmanas, you know, who memorize scriptures and they, you know, use that as a means of living, you know, going to these pujas, performing pujas, and you know, they don't see it as a means of liberation, they see it as a means of living. Nowadays even that has become very brushed. You know, a few months back we were observing, you know, in our building there was a Ganpati which had come, you know, Sarvajanik Ganpati which was brought in our building. So we were just listening to the mantras which are being chanted by the, you know, they had brought a Brahman from outside, you know, on hire for those 5 days that the Ganpati was there. And the mantras which he was chanting were not even the full aarti, you know. The full aarti which is sung, Ganpati aarti, is a proper big aarti is there, you know. But he was not even chanting that. And he chants a few mantras and at the end of it says, Ganpati Bappa, Moria. So everyone feels, yes, it's very bona fide, nicely he is saying the mantras. But even the mantras are not chanted properly. So today, with the effect of Kali Yuga, you know, very often, like we have seen, people put cassettes, you know, because even Brahmanas are not available. Even the not so pure Brahmanas are not available, or they are too expensive. Therefore, people put cassettes, you know, to listen, and they feel, theek hai, you know, ho gaya, aarti ho gaya. So this is the state, you know. One is that people take it as a profession. Second thing, which is worse, is that they become proud. Because I am performing these austerities, you know, I become very proud. You know, if I am doing Ekadashi, you know, I feel proud. Forget Ekadashi. You know, if I am following 4 regulative principles and I come across some of my colleagues, office people, you know, who are not able to follow, you know, feel that, come on, you know, I'm obviously better than them, right? So that's our attitude. Immediately that pride creeps into our heart, irrespective. So austerities or taking vows or having great knowledge, you know, the Vedic knowledge, if you're an expert in Shastra, naturally, you know, you have a chip on your shoulder. You become proud that, you know, I know so many shlokas. Like when I speak, you know, people are just spellbound. That pride comes into the heart. And moment that pride comes, what happens? We fall down. As it is said, pride cometh before the fall. So many examples that are given in the scriptures. It's described, you know, that there was this Roop Kaviraj, you know, was a great scholar of the Srimad Bhagavatam, disciple of Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. So he, when he used to give Srimad Bhagavatam class, you know, people were just spellbound, you know, just by his scholarship. He was so brilliant in speaking and explaining the Srimad Bhagavatam. So once when he was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, he saw that there was one devotee, Mataji, Krishna Priya. She was also a daughter of a devotee, and she was born a devotee, you know, from her very birth she was a devotee, and she was completely addicted to the chanting of the holy names, and she would be chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra at all times. So even during the Srimad Bhagavatam lecture, she came down very respectfully, she sat down, and while he was speaking, under her breath she was still chanting, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. She was constantly chanting even under her breath, but she was also listening. So this Roop Kaviraj, he was so offended, you know, because of his pride, he felt that I am such a great speaker, how dare she, you know, not pay attention when I am speaking. How dare she not pay attention? Immediately, you know, that pride came into his heart, and he couldn't tolerate. You know, when you are proud or you are very envious, you know, they are like, they are like something pressing on you, you know. You know, if something is pressing, you know, when you are sitting, somebody is pressing on your shoulders. You know, suppose sometimes when we are standing, somebody is pressing on your shoulder, standing with, you know, like this. For some time you can tolerate it, you know, but then after some time, you know, like you take off his shoulder, you know. If he's not your friend, you push him off. If he's your friend, you tell him, Prabhu, can you just take off your hand? You know, it's pressing down. Because that pressure is too much. So pride and envy are like that. They press on our heart, you know. It's like pressing more and more and more and more. Till some point it will just, like, you know, comes out like a volcano, you know. So it just came out like a volcano. He started chastising her. That how dare you, you know, how can you be, you know, listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, when I am speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, you are chanting, you know, how can you be doing both these things together? So she very innocently, she said, no Prabhu, I am actually listening, but I am helpless. You know, I am just not able to stop my tongue from chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It is, It is just so naturally coming out from my heart. I'm not able to stop. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to offend you, but it's just... But he was just chastising her, you know. No, no, no. How is it possible? This, that, another. So, just by this one act, you know, because of his pride, of his knowledge, you know, of his spiritual knowledge, what knowledge he had of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because he had this pride, he immediately fell down. Austerity, you know, the example is given of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra, you know, when he saw the tejas that Vasishtha had, you know, Vasishtha, despite Vishwamitra, Vishwamitra was earlier a king, you know, despite all his power, he was not able to defeat Vasishtha, you know, and the cow that Vasishtha had, he was just not able to defeat. So he realized, he was a very intelligent person, Vishwamitra, he realized that, oh, it is, you know, this person, because he's a Brahma Rishi, he has more power than me, I'm just a, you know, ordinary king. So he performed great austerity, tremendous austerity he performed, and by that austerity, he was declared as a Raja Rishi, which is lower than a Brahma Rishi. He was declared as a Raja Rishi. And Vasishtha, whenever he saw Vishwamitra, with great love and respect, he said, say, Jai, Raja Rishi, you know, Raja Rishi Vishwamitra, Jai, you know, he would say. And that would create more envy in his heart. You know, instead of appreciating that someone of that stature, someone like Vasishtha Muni, you know, is glorifying me, instead of that you become more envy, and the austerity, he started performing more austerities. And that more austerities, why was he performing? Not because he was, you know, he was wanting to attain the Supreme Lord. No. He was performing the austerities so that I should also become Brahma Rishi. People should call me Brahma Rishi, you know, and not just Vasishtha. I want to become greater than Vasishtha. So his intention was not to purify himself or to attain the Supreme Lord. His intention was to become a Brahma Rishi. So he was becoming so proud by his austerities, but still every time when Vasishtha Muni would see him, he would refer to him and say, Jai Raja Rishi Vishwamitra, you know. So thing was so horribly entrenched in his heart, he became so envious towards Vasishtha that one fine day he decided, I will kill Vasishtha. That is the only solution, because I am not still reaching that platform of you know, Brahma Rishi. Despite so much austerities, I am still referred to by everybody as Raja Rishi. So the only solution is I kill Vasishtha. He decided to kill Vasishtha, and he went towards Vasishtha's home. And when he went to Vasishtha's home to kill him, at that time, he overheard Vasishtha talking to his wife. And his wife was saying, have you seen the moon today? It is looking so beautiful. The moon is resplendent, you know, it is just transcendently giving out light, you know, so beautifully it is giving out tej. So Vasishtha said, yes, it is giving out tej, tejas just like our, you know, wonderful Vishwamitra. Just like a Vishwamitra, every day by his austerity, his tej is increasing. You know, by performing so much austerity, daily his radiance, his tejas is increasing every day. Same way the moon is also radiating light today. When Vishwamitra heard this, he was shattered. He understood that this person, you know, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, whom I have come here to kill, he has nothing but praise for me in his heart. He has nothing, though I am so envious towards him, he has nothing but love and respect for me, though I am such a wretched fallen person. So he immediately, he goes and falls down at the lotus feet of Vasishtha Muni, and he begs for forgiveness. He says, please, please forgive me, I am such a fallen person, you know. I am so proud of what austerities I am doing, and I have such evil intentions in my heart. Please, please forgive me, you know, for my wretched condition. And at that time, at that moment, Vasishtha Muni, he smiles and he picks him up and says, Jai Brahma Rishi, you know, Vishwamitra. He says, now that you have conquered that pride that you had above your austerities, that envy that you had in your heart, now you are qualified to be Brahma Rishi. And then from that day, he is called Brahma Rishi. So, just by performing these austerities, by having great knowledge, by, you know, taking great vows, by performing, you know, sometimes we do Ekadashi, Nirjal Ekadashi. There are some very great devotees, you know, who are able to perform Nirjal. And others who don't perform Nirjal, if we become proud, See, I am performing nirjal. Rest of them also fallen. You know? Not fallen, but they are not able to control their senses like I can. You know, the moment that pride enters, immediately, you know, it is not pleasing to Krishna. However, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that despite all these austerities being so difficult to perform, not being practical, everything, if you see, Srila Prabhupada has so magically, so expertly, he has included all this in devotional service. When we perform devotional service, all of this is automatically included. And that's the point he's making in this purport over here. He says that, you know, for those who are performing devotional service, the wording he uses, if one takes to devotional service, all of them, all these 10 processes of liberation are very easily performed. He says, mauna, he takes the example of mauna. He says, mauna doesn't mean that you keep quiet. You know, in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada gives this example that mauna doesn't mean, for devotees, doesn't mean to keep quiet. He says, mauna means, for devotees, it means to only speak about topics of Krishna. To not speak any materialistic nonsense. He says that the speaking of, you know, materialistic people, you know, great orators, you know, people who speak very well, you know, on various nonsensical materialistic topics, he says they are like croaking like toads, only inviting the serpa of time, you know, which is going to come and consume them. He says, but for devotees, mauna means keeping quiet unless you are speaking about Krishna. So when we are speaking about Krishna continuously, you know, if we are, as he says, Kirtaniya Sadahari, if we are constantly using our tongues only to glorify Krishna, whenever you open your mouth, open it to speak something about the glories of Krishna. Otherwise, don't speak. You know? So, practically utilizing, you know, our tongue in the service of Krishna. Then vows. You know, sometimes we take vows. You know, those of us who have taken initiation, even those who have not taken initiation, you know, we take this vow that we will chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. When, you know, those who start chanting initially we say that I will chant at least one round daily. That is also a vow. When you say, you know, when you say to yourself, you know, tell the devotees, you know, that, okay, I have started chanting and every day I will chant one round. That is also a vow. That is also very purifying. If we follow that vow, that is also very nice. When we chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Mahamantra every day, and when we take a vow, you know, during initiation we take a vow, we will chant 16 rounds every day, we will follow the four regulative principles, you know, when we take these vows in front of the sacred fire, in front of the Lord, it is extremely purifying. But, you know, another point which Radhanand Maharaj was mentioning in one of his lectures, he says that just taking vows by themselves don't bring us close to Krishna. However, following these vows with humility actually brings us to Krishna. That means just by itself taking a vow from today, you know, thundering, you know, from today I shall chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and I will follow the four regulative principles. And the skies will not open up, you know, and demigods will not pour flowers on you just because you took this vow. Just by itself taking a vow is not, it is pleasing to Krishna, definitely it has its value that we took a vow and we intend to sincerely follow it. Krishna sees the intention in our heart. Just the external activity of taking a vow is not sufficient. What is it that really pleases Krishna? If we are sincerely, to the best of our capacity, we are following this vow for the rest of our lives, till there is, you know, breath left in our bodies, till that point, if we are very sincerely, to the best of our capacity, trying to follow that vow, that is what really pleases Krishna. That is really pleasing to Krishna. Even this point about solitude, you know, yesterday I was just reading one small passage of a conversation between His Holiness Satswarup Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. So, actually Satswarup Maharaj writes, in one of his writings, he writes that before I came to Krishna consciousness, I had this conception, you know, that being alone, you know, in one place, is a very spiritual experience. It is, in one sense, you know. Sometimes, you know, if you just go and sit in one place, you know, very quiet in the mountains, just go and sit in the mountains and, you know, just be. Don't do anything, don't read anything. You're just there alone sitting. It is, you know, it touches our soul somewhere, you know. So he said that I also had this conception, solitude. It is mentioned as one of the methods to liberation here, you know. So he says, even I had this conception that being alone, solitude, you know, is something nice. But he says, it never gave me satisfaction. In my heart, when I was following this process, it never gave me the satisfaction that I desire. But he said, when I went and asked Srila Prabhupada that what is this concept of solitude and how does it apply to devotees? So Srila Prabhupada told him, solitude means avoiding non-devotees. You know, he says solitude means avoiding those who are not devotees. Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan Ki Jai. Solitude means avoiding non-devotees, and solitude also means being with devotees. He says being with devotees, you know, as long as you can, is as good or better than being alone. So even if you are performing devotional service, even if you are doing your chanting, you are doing your bhajan, you know, like this devotee we discussed, you know, who went to Vrindavan and was chanting 192 rounds, it is better to be in the association of devotees and chant 16 rounds than try to go alone and do some, you know, solitary bhajan. Ekant ki harir bhakti, not recommended. Ekant ki harir bhakti, meaning solitary, you know, hari bhakti, is not recommended. Though there are many examples amongst our acharyas, you know, like Haridas Thakur, there's Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, who had their bhajan kutir, were doing. But they are acharyas, they are supremely pure, you know, devotees who have already, you know, who are already paramhamsas. For them it is a different matter, but for you and me, for ordinary people, it is not a recommended process. So he says that being in the company of devotees is solitude, because you are not contaminating your heart by associating with non-devotees. So Srila Prabhupada, if you see, has so expertly, you know, even the Shastra, knowledge of Shastra is also included. One visit to a Sunday feast program, you know, we come one day to a Sunday feast program and all these processes are taken care of, you know, all of them. Just see, the mauna, you know, observing vows, amassing Vedic knowledge, undergoing austerities, all this, one visit to Sunday feast program, you come every week and you are already following all this. So wonderfully Srila Prabhupada has woven all these principles of liberation together into the process of Krishna consciousness and made it into Kevala Ananda Kanda. You know, Lord Chaitanya has given this process which is Kevala Ananda Kanda. While if you try to follow any of these austerities individually, you know, like taking a vow, performing some austerities, any of them you do individually, very, very difficult. It is definitely not Ananda Kanda to perform austerities. Definitely not. But if we are following the process of Krishna consciousness sincerely, chanting the 16 rounds, associating with devotees, reading scriptures, taking prasad, hearing Krishna katha, Kevala Ananda Kanda. It is just joyful, and at the same time, we are following all these processes and we are getting liberated. So by simply following all these processes, you know, very sincerely till the end of our life, just by following, you know, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, following the principles, hearing Krishna Katha daily, associating with devotees as much as possible. You know, when we associate with devotees, everything else is taken care of. You know, all our spiritual needs, nourishments happen when we are with the devotees. It's all taken care of. If we just follow sincerely till the end of our life, we will go back to Godhead. At the very end of this life itself, we will go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada is giving us the means to liberation in this life itself. As is mentioned, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita 8.27, I was quoting last Sunday also to some devotee we were discussing, that he, in that chapter, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining, you know, the different means by which one can get liberated. You know, for those who are following the path of Dhyana Yoga, you know, at a particular time of, you know, particular time of day or a particular time of night, depending on what your posture is, how you are concentrating your breath, and what is the exact time, whether it's a waxing moon or waning moon, depending on all these circumstances coming together perfectly like a constellation, you know, perfectly all the conditions come together, and then you concentrate your breath and leave, you know, the breath should go out from a particular point in your body, then you will be liberated, right? But if you don't follow any of these conditions, one of these conditions doesn't come, fall into place, sorry, you will not get liberated. You will have one more chance in your next life. You will be defined as Yoga Brashta Vijayate. You know, you come back again and hopefully get born in the family of a devotee. But you will not be liberated in that lifetime because something went wrong. However, you know, he then assures, you know, Srila Prabhupada in the next very next verse, what Krishna is saying, he said that devotees don't need to worry. You know, whether they will die. See, like for example, one who is following this path of liberation, you know, of austerity and, you know, controlling the senses and so on and so forth, he has to be worried. Okay, I should be able to leave my body at this particular time of the month, in this particular location, in this particular position, with all my senses in control. He has to worry a lot, you know. Bahut sochna padta hai ki bas, will I actually succeed in doing all this? Whereas he says the devotee doesn't need to worry about anything. If you are just following the path of Krishna consciousness genuinely and sincerely, then your path back to Godhead is safe, certain and direct. He uses these words, safe, certain and direct. That means very safe, there is no danger. You know, thoda idhar udhar bhi ho gaya, if you have been following, Krishna will take care of everything. Grace marks. Krishna gives grace marks. Even if you have, you know, somewhere you are falling short, he will give you the grace marks. It is certain. In so many places, in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna has given 100% assurance, you will come back to me. Just follow this process. You will come back. And it is direct. There is no, you know, indirect means. It is just direct. Just follow it and straight away you go back to Godhead. So, if we follow, yes. But just, I'd like to end with, you know, a different thought, that there is nothing automatic also. You know, sometimes we feel when we preach to the newcomers, we tell them Krishna consciousness means you just chant Hare Krishna, it's like a lift, you know, you get into the lift, automatically you will reach the 50th floor and you will become pure devotee. No problem, everything automatically will happen. Yes, it will happen, no doubt. But for this, we need to stay in that lift. You know, the lift which is going up slowly, slowly, we need to stay in the lift. If people are going in, coming out, you see so many people are leaving the lift, I'll also go. You know, or on when the lift door opens, you see something very beautiful over there, ah, so wonderful. And you leave, you know, you go out, I'll come back in the lift. After some time I'll come back, but then you go out onto that floor and never come back into the lift again. So nothing is automatic. You know, Maya is always tempting us at every stage of our life. You know, like Gaurang Prabhu was giving this example, you know, that in a prison, same like we started with the prison, we'll end also with the prison example. In a prison, you know, as long as all the prisoners are daily breaking the stones or doing whatever work have been told to them, it's a very peaceful atmosphere. I mean, in a prison also, it's very peaceful. Things just go on normally, you know, some squabbles here and there, but otherwise, generally it's a peaceful environment, you know, there's no noise, nothing. But one fine day, when a prisoner decides to escape from the prison, moment he decides to escape, what happens? Jang, 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 all the sirens starts playing, you know, the lights go helter-skelter, you know, searching for him, dogs start running out, all the people, the policemen, whistles blowing, you know, there's chaos. All over the place, chaos is there. Why? So that this fellow will be caught. They don't make it easy for him to escape. So he said, the same way, as long as a person is nicely ensconced in the material world, you know, happily enjoying, blissfully unaware, you know, just trying to enjoy in this material world, there is no problem. Maya Devi lets him enjoy. Take, enjoy, take some more, you know. You want 3 rotis? Take 3 rotis. You know, prisoner wants good behavior, no, in the prison? Take 3 rotis. Very good, take. So she will allow him to enjoy. She will keep him in the prison, however. Moment he tries to run away, immediately all alarm bells go off. You know, Maya Devi will start throwing all kinds of temptations, you know, one after the other. Talk, 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 talk. Why? Because he's become, you know, complacent. The other thing, you know, even if, you know, I was just thinking, if a prisoner tries to leave, you know, the normal way, he's finished his term, he was brought into prison because he had done some burglary, you know, he had stolen some things. So he's finished his term, very nicely, like a gentleman, he's going out. So when the prisoner goes out of jail, normally the, you know, the warden or the jailer, they return his belongings, you know, that ye raha tumhara shirt, ye raha tumhare, you know, your clothes, here is your bag, here is the 55 rupees which you had in your wallet, here is the 1200 rupees you earned in your, you know, tenure, and then they leave him. Now suppose the jailer also tells him, here is the gold ring which we found in your bag, and here is the, you know, Rolex watch which we also found in your bag. Now the prisoner actually knows, actually this is not mine, it was stolen. Okay, or he knows that actually I hadn't even stolen this. This was not really in my bag. Looks like it's a misunderstanding, you know. I'll just quietly pocket it. Now, jailer only is giving, na. So if he tries to take it, jailer has the facility. That means you're still not reformed. You stay here for some more time, you know. The jailer can hold us back. So same way, when we are following the path of devotional service, even when the time comes to go back to Godhead, you know, Mayadevi will be constantly tempting us, you know, with something. Last minute, she will throw some gold ring at you, you know. Take this, you know, this is also nice. If we fall for it, we will stay back in the material world. So nothing is automatic, nothing happens on its own. You know, when I'll end with this last point, you know, a very beautiful quote by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, where he was mentioning in one lecture, he says that all your life you may be following, you know, devotional path, you may follow, not follow, whatever. But he says, Maya will never give up. Her job is to keep you here unless you are 100% ready. Her job is to keep you here till the very last moment. She will never give up. She will keep trying to, you know, entice you. And he said, even at the last moment, Maya is whispering in one ear and Krishna is whispering in the other ear. Krishna is whispering, come, come back. And Maya is whispering, not now, next life. Little bit more you enjoy. You've already become a pure devotee. You know, you already reached 95%. 5%, next life will start from 96 anyway, no? One more lifetime, come on, come on. And Krishna is saying, no, it's okay. 95 is good enough for me, you come back now. So, even at the last moment, Maya is whispering in one ear, Krishna is whispering in the other. So, whose whisper will you hear? Whose whisper is louder? Depends on all our life, whose whisper we have been hearing. If all our life Krishna has been whispering, but we have been listening to the whisper of Maya, parallelly we are also doing our devotional service. We are doing chanting 16 rounds, coming to temple, reading Bhagavatam, everything. But at the same time, whenever Maya whispers, we say yes, yes, and we listen to what she is saying. If all our life we have been listening to Maya's whisper, at the time of death, it is very difficult. Even if Krishna is screaming into our ears, still we can hear only Maya. So therefore, nothing is automatic. We have to sincerely follow the process for all our life, taking the association of the devotees and praying sincerely to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath that they can always deliver us. If we follow this way in the Guru Parampara, then there is no doubt that at the end of this life, we can go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
A very important point. First, thank you for a wonderful class. You made a very important point that Prabhupada has so well woven this entire process to bring in austerities and the process to make it Keval Ananda Khanda. So I want you to expand a little on that, because we see that austerities are very difficult. Even if it is a child who is 11th standard, 12th standard, has to study, it's an austerity. Kids don't want to study. But if it can be made into something like this process where it's pleasurable, then everything becomes so easy. So could you just expand a little on that?
I'm not sure I'll be able to relate it to the process of studying, because it's definitely not very blissful for me also. But point I was trying to make is that when Srila Prabhupada has woven all these various, you know, means of liberation together in the process of Krishna consciousness. If you see a typical day in the life of a devotee, it starts with, you know, getting up early in the morning, which is austerity. Then it is chanting the holy names. And then it is attending Mangal Aarti, you know, which is chanting Vedic mantras. Then it is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is following your vow. Then it is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, you know, reading Vedic scriptures. So on and so forth. He has woven all these, you know, mini processes of liberation into the process of Krishna consciousness in a typical day of a devotee. But what makes it blissful? What is that ingredient which makes it blissful? It is the collective enthusiasm of all the devotees which makes it blissful. It is the it is the pleasure that we see in the eyes of other devotees and Guru, and hopefully someday Krishna, when they see us sincerely trying to practice the process of Krishna consciousness. When we see that by our following Krishna consciousness in some humble manner, it is pleasing to Guru, or it is pleasing to the Vaishnava. Some Vaishnava comes and embraces, you know, Prabhu, so nicely you are chanting, so nicely you are dancing, you know. Just by following that process to the best of our capability, when we see it is giving pleasure to others, then we are able to sustain that process very nicely. And simultaneously we see others who are very enthusiastically following, so in the momentum we are able to do it. So austerities are easily performed if the motivation is there and the enthusiasm is there. You know, once Radhanand Maharaj was mentioning again in one of the lectures, he had said that actually following Krishna consciousness, if you follow the process strictly, very strictly follow the process, it's very easy. But if you become lenient, then it is difficult. Which actually sounds like a contradiction. Why should following the process strictly be easy and not following strictly be difficult? Because if we follow strictly every day, we chant our 16 rounds at the same time on our beats every day, it's not difficult. We are able to do it day in and day out for years together. We may not chant attentively, that's another matter. But at least we are able to chant daily every day. It's very easy because we are doing it daily, right? But he said one day, for some reason you don't chant. He said don't try it out. He said one day if you don't chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, next day when you lift those beads, they seem very heavy. It's very difficult. Very difficult to even lift those beads. Oh, Hare Krishna, it's very difficult. Each mantra will sound like an austerity after that. Why? Because you have allowed Maya to enter into your life. So, if you are strictly following daily as a practice, it's not difficult. But we need that enthusiasm, we need that motivation. So, just to take the example of children studying, the only reason why children would study, only reason I see they would study, is either, same, taking the same example, that they see that all their friends, all their colleagues are studying and going ahead in life. Or, you know, they see that studying really pleases somebody. You know, when they study, when they do it sincerely, see, one is, it's never going to please them. It's very difficult to become ecstatic by studying, right? But they see that it is pleasing somebody else. So if we express on those rare moments where they study on their own, you know, anything, not just study, sometimes when they chant, you know, we are very quick to find, I speak for myself also, I'm very quick to criticize. You know, when children or other devotees or anybody does something wrong, we're very quick to find fault. But when day in and day out they're doing something very nicely, we never praise them. We never go to them and say, Prabhu, you're doing so nicely. You know, we don't praise our children at all when they're doing something nicely. So we should, you know, like we go overboard in criticizing when they make a mistake, there is no harm in going overboard and praising them when they do nicely. When they see that you are genuinely happy because they study a little bit, you know, on their own, then they automatically, some over a period of time, we have to, of course, sometimes, you know, prevail on them, shout at them, etc. But sometimes working, you know, lovingly explaining to them what the reason for your having to study is, it works. So as far as devotees are concerned, devotional practice is concerned, without the association of like-minded devotees, it is impossible. It's impossible for us to follow this process. You know, it then it is not keval ananda kanda, it is keval formality. It just becomes a formality, a ritual. We just daily we come, we chant, we go back. It's our life becomes dry, our heart becomes dry. There's no rasa. But if we are associating with devotees and taking, you know, their association, then it is a blissful process. Hare Krishna.